The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Thank you so much for downloading this episode of So What Do You Really Do, the podcast where I, your host, Dead Art Dennis Mallard, talks to artists and entertainers about their day jobs. And the artist and entertainer on today's program is Madeline Teig, a comedian and lab technician in Texas, who I met during the Plano Comedy Festival a couple months ago. You might have remembered if you watch the podcast. If you're a regular watcher or listener of the podcast, you know that I was out there a couple months ago. Madeline, we're on the Dirty Show together, and once you listen to this episode of the podcast, you will find out exactly why she was on the Dirty Show. I'm still wondering why I was on the Dirty Show until I actually reviewed some of my submission tapes that I sent out to him, and I opened with a joke about suicide. So, yeah, no, it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. I kept wondering why. I do clean comedy sometimes, most of the time. Not enough of the time. Okay. But as you notice, not in the studio. In fact, I'm starting to notice how echoey this room sounds. I'm in a hotel room in New York because I just came to New York for the weekend. I'm doing a couple gigs. I saw a show that I was really excited to go see. I'm taking a puppeteering class with a friend. I'm going to go see a friend of mine who's a puppeteer and take their class and hang out with them. And just going to have a good time here in New York with my dog, who is named Sister, who's right behind me. You know, if you've been over the past couple episodes, you know that I've been running around for 2 months because I have 3 months off from work because I'm unemployed. I'm on furlough from my job at Boston Duck Tour, so I'm taking full advantage, and I'm visiting some places and friends and seeing some pandemic friends in person for the first time. That's going to be fun. I know, we're 4 years past the pandemic, and I'm still just meeting some of my pandemic friends in person and confirming that we all do, in fact, have legs, except for, you know, the ones that don't have legs, and I'm confirming that they don't have legs. We're all so much taller when we're not inside the Zoom boxes. But this was a really good, fun podcast with Madeline. We're trying to schedule this back and forth a lot. Legit mad scientists working in a lab with a coat and petri dishes and all the crazy things. And I will warn you now, this is a very graphic episode. We will be talking about some things that even I had difficulty sitting through. But it's a fun one. So if you can handle bodily fluid talk, then this is going to be a good podcast for you. But if you're going to listen around kids or maybe at work, put your earbuds in while you enjoy my podcast with lab technician and comedian Madeline Teig. Like, I'm recording my own feed. I'm recording this feed. I have to record a lot of things. Even if I'm on the road, and by on the road, I mean I took half my podcast studio with me in a suitcase. By the way, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Was the Vegas trip part of the birthday, or was that just for fun, in regardless to the birthday?
It was a friend's birthday a couple weeks before mine, but I like kind of treated it as my birthday too, mentally at least. I ended up going to the casino again on Sunday night, on my actual birthday night, just like for funsies in Oklahoma. It was good. Good time.
So you went to Oklahoma casino. Like, how far is that drive from the Dallas area?
Like an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay. Is it that close to Oklahoma? I don't know. I wish when I was there in Dallas with you guys, Plano with you guys a couple months ago, I wish I had made a trip up to Oklahoma because allegedly my grandfather was born on the Osage Nation in April of 1900, which means there's like no paperwork. But he joined World War I and then under an assumed name, and then there's no records of him ever being born. So if I knew it was that close, I would have taken a trip to Oklahoma instead of my trip to Austin, which probably would have been so much more productive than going to Austin for the day, because Austin, I mean, I'm not that familiar with it. I've only went there once, but it seems like it is not the fun, magical place it was the last time I went. It seemed very run down and scary.
Parts of it definitely have become that way. Yeah.
I mean, I'm from Baltimore, so originally from Baltimore, I live in Boston, so I have a different level of what is scary, but it was like, when you're walking around Austin and it's just homeless people screaming, having a shouting match across the street from each other. Like, there's like, you stay on your side, and I'm going to stay on my side, and I'm going to yell at you, and you yell at me. I'm like, that's clearly two people that don't give a fuck about anything. I'm going to go down this way.
Yeah, and it's like right by the comedy club, too, so like,
yeah, and that's what I was coming from Creek in the Cave, because
decided to do their midnight open mic, which is like, I should have known better. It is just nothing but insane rambling and guys off their meds all talking about how much they hate women. I'm like, why am I here? This was not. You knew better than this, Dennis.
I mean, midnight open mic says it all.
Yeah, right? Midnight open mic in Joe Rogan territory. I even said while I was hanging out at Creek in the Cave to two guys that just came from the mothership, which again, Dennis, you should have known better than this. They were just talking. I was like, you know, I really can't listen to Joe Rogan anymore. His theories and stuff were just too out there. And you would have thought I spit in this dude's mom's vagina. He was so mad. He was like literally shaking, just going, what do you, I think Joe Rogan's just a good listener. I'm
like, okay.
Okay, sure. He does a 3-hour podcast where people barely get to talk, but okay, good listener. Mm-hmm. But so the casino. All right, tell me about casinos, because I don't. We got in Massachusetts. We don't have any casinos. Mm-hmm. The closest one that I know of is in Connecticut, and I've performed at the comedy club there a couple times. And it is. It's sensory overload.
Yeah.
I mean, is it the same way to go home? I don't know. Is it? I'm thinking. I gotta imagine all casinos are the same, but. Is it? It's a lot of performing for people who are like, I ran out of money and this ticket was free. Make me laugh, funny boy.
Oh well, I didn't do any like comedy there. I literally just gambled. but I'm a cheap ass, so I'm like scared to go on the board where like you know the table where you have to actually put cash down for like cards or roulette because I'm just scared on those tables because the minimum is like $50 on some of these tables. While in the slots, you're playing pennies, you know, so you're just hoping for that bonus on the slots.
Yeah, see, I have the degenerate gambling father, so I stay away from the casinos. I'm also cool with doing, like, backdoor friend's house games, because you know what?
Oh, yeah.
Worst going to happen is one of my friends gets too drunk and mad that he knows his girlfriend's going to get pissed that he lost $200. Whereas at the casino, they'll take your house, and I don't even own a house. They'll find some way to take my apartment away from me.
Yeah, it can get crazy.
They'll take your car. You'll put up your car and not have a way back from the casino.
Yeah, last time I drove up there, I noticed right next to the casino is a pawn shop. Like the closest thing to it was a pawn shop.
That's like putting a Girl Scout cookie, selling Girl Scout cookies outside of a marijuana dispensary. Know where your audience is.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about work because I've been dying to talk to you about this since we met. I mean, I finally have a real medical professional person on the podcast. You know how long I've been trying to get Dr. Ken Jeong on this podcast because I want to talk to somebody who has an actual medical degree, or at least, I mean, not medical, but you have a science. Like, all right, let's talk about, all right, I don't know where to start. It's so, like, okay, because when we were talking at the bar, the Plano House of Comedy about this, I was just getting excited. I was like, don't spoil any of this for me. Let's talk about it on the podcast. So you are, all right, you now work, you're a legit fucking mad scientist, white lab coat, all that, mixing chemicals and shit. Let's just start from the beginning. I'm not going to ask questions. I just want to hear how you got from young little girl in Texas to mad scientist. So when you were young, what was it about biology as a young kid that made you want to grow up to be a laboratory manager?
Yes. So
I'm also saving. I'm trying not to spoil the good parts of the stories. Let's start with work your way up to the fun part of being a mad scientist.
Well, of course, name Madeline, aka Mad Dog, Mad Props, Mad Scientist, just falls into line with that. I ended up going to school for a biology degree. You know, hopes and dreams to be a doctor one day was like the ultimate thing when you're super young, but once you get into school, you see the reality of things. So I ended up with a biology degree, and then I was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with a biology degree? Went into school. After that, got the job, and I ended up just working in a lab.
Don't go too far. Let's talk about, because you went to the University of Texas.
At Arlington.
Okay, that's what I was going to want. It specifically says Arlington. Is there a... I went to 6 years of community college and did not graduate. I am not an expert in what colleges are good or bad. So is this distinction that it's Arlington something different? Is it like Harvard compared to Harvard Business School, where it's like, you have the Harvard name.
No, it's completely different. So, like, you know, like SUNY's, there's like SUNY Albany, SUNY whatever, they're different, like, state colleges. So there's one in San Antonio, there's one in Austin, that's the main one, UT, but all these other ones, like, there's UT Dallas, UT Arlington, so there's just completely different universities all within the UT family.
Okay, is there a reason why you picked Arlington over one of the other ones, or any
other
college?
I didn't get into the others.
Yeah. Most, that's what comedians, look, I went to the college that accepted me. When I talk to most comedians about the colleges, then you talk to somebody else and they're like, oh, well, I had my choice of this one and that one. I went because I decided that my family heritage was like, ah, fuck you.
Well, speaking of that,
to the one that took me to the dance.
I almost went to UMass Amherst, though, because I have family in Massachusetts.
You've spent, I remember us talking, you've spent time up in the New England Eastern Seaboard growing up, right?
Not growing up, just summers here and there, visiting family.
Okay. Growing up, just the summers of growing up. Okay. I mean, you're a college graduate, a true college graduate. We were splitting hairs there on my grammar. Okay. Okay. So is doctoring in the family business? Is this something that you felt like you got pushed into? Like, very interested in why people had the idea to grow up to become the things they did. Like, to me, I grew up in theater. I grew up loving radio. I grew up in the 80s and 90s. Radio was everything. Alternative rock radio owned the world when I was growing up, right, in the early 90s. And that's what I wanted to be. It mixed all my favorite things. It mixed music, it mixed comedy, and it mixed acting. I could do all of that on radio. So for me, as a kid, I knew I wanted to grow up to be in the radio industry. And I saw a clear path for that. Not everybody in their younger years saw clear paths like that. Some of them stumbled into things there. Did you stumble to biology? Were you persuaded into it? What made you want to become a doctor?
Well, I did the internships at the hospital when I was in high school. I was in the science magnet in high school. So I've always been like into the science. Math has always been more of my strong suit. So...
Up in Texas, did you feel that science was not as prevalent among some of the people in your area? Because what we're looking at going on now in the state over there is they're complete science deniers.
I live in a Democratic area, so it's a little different.
Yeah, okay. Is Dallas considered Democratic? Because I've been to Austin, and now I've been to Plano, Dallas area.
Well, Plano's in the DFW. Yeah, I would say overall, we're a Democratic area for sure. Because Texas is becoming more purple. This just depends on like where you're looking at, what area.
Okay, because I mean, Massachusetts love to say that they're liberal, but at the same time, everything that's not the Boston and the arm, everything that's not East Massachusetts voted Trump. So it's like, are you really a blue state? Because most of New England to me is just the South with different accents. It's very, it's very backwards, if you ask me personally. Somebody coming from Baltimore, I mean, it's also, Maryland's also a blue state, but it's got some, ding, 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 ding.
I mean, everybody's everywhere. Mixed culture. But yeah, no. So I just ended up getting a science degree after, college. And then I wasn't planning on doing laboratory sciences. That just kind of fell into place.
Yeah. How does that fall into place, laboratory sciences? Is it one of those just look – like, I remember when I – all right, so I'm only a couple years – I'm not that much older than you. You're a child of the – I'm a child of the early 80s. You're a child of the late 80s. That's so there was that when I getting out of, college area, like looking for jobs. The only way to look for jobs when I was growing up was the newspaper.
Craigslist.
Craigslist. I mean, there is I am pre Craigslist on that. There's the newspaper want ads. There was agencies that you'd have to go to an office and then you would sit on the big, huge CRT computer that had the giant clickety-clack buttons and dot matrix printers. Can't imagine ever finding a job in that kind of industry in a newspaper ad or a Craigslist ad. So for you, someone who has, I have a biology, a scientific biology degree. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with it? I got it for me. I'm dumb. So I don't know. I would end up still just working at bars and restaurants, waiting tables.
Yeah, well, I did that too.
Yeah. Like, I would hope that another scientist would come in for lunch and be like, oh, you have a science degree? Here, use my name on the application. That's mm-hmm. the only way I would hope I would get a job in science. How did you, fresh out of college, 22 years old, find mm-hmm. your way into laboratory tech?
An ad.
Did you? Nice!
Just an ad on Indeed, and boom, lucky, lucky me. I was working at Cracker Barrel at the time, okay? Cracker Barrel. And I was on the PAR system, and someone read something about the good customer service about Cracker Barrel, and that's how I got the interview. Yeah.
So wait, you got a laboratory tech job because of your review of customer service at Cracker Barrel?
Yep.
I love that. Why are you holding that story back, man? Come on, man.
I don't want to tell the truth. I worked at Cracker Barrel. Yeah. No, because you were talking about serving jobs. I'm like, that's not below me. I've done that. We've all done that. And I even did that while working at the lab because, you know, it didn't pay that great at first. But after work experience from one lab to the next lab, that's how I got my certification as a medical laboratory technologist or medical technologist. And now I'll work my way up to be a manager.
Okay. So what was the first lab that you worked at? Was it CARE or was it a different lab?
It was the Center for Assisted Reproduction.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even realize CARE stood for Center for Assisted. What is it? Tell it. Say it again. C-A-R-E?
Center for Assisted Reproduction, and then they add the E for embryo.
All right. Yeah. This is the story I wanted to get to because mm-hmm. I absolutely love. Did you know anything about andrology before
no.
this lab?
Not a thing, dude. It was all new to me.
All right. Well, let's also let out that other. It's not a secret. You're on the LGBTQ side of things. So
yeah,
what is the term for full lesbian? Is it a golden lesbian? Is that what it is? They call it someone who's never been with a gold star. You're open about it. I'm pretty sure you're not gonna. Are you gold star?
I say I am.
You are. Okay.
People will question me, but I say I am.
I love that.
That's a different podcast.
There's another one of your ex-girlfriends have definitely asked for a resume of everyone you've been with.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So how does a lesbian get into male reproduction?
An ad. But in all honesty, one of my interview questions was like, are you okay with LGBT couples? Right? Because, you know, lesbians try and get pregnant. This is where they go. Couples, you know, maybe two men used in a surrogate. This is where they go. So I had to be, you know, open-minded with it. And I was like, little do they know. I'm a total lesbian. Yeah.
Am I okay with LGBTQ plus people? Yes. I'm a card-toting member, of course.
Yeah. That's what happened.
All right. So what's getting into this, into the male reproductive management. What was?
Well, I wasn't the manager there. I just worked my way up from the bottom.
Well, I meant working in that field. What was the early days of that like?
Oh, it was interesting. So it was my first. I always say big girl job, and I was working in a lab. There was about four of us. We did all the blood work, so all the hormone testing. And we did all of the semen andrology. So all of that fun male reproductive health, we would analyze, freeze, prepare for IVF, IUIs, and all that fun ICSIs, procedures, and testing. But that was a long time ago. At this point, it's been like 12 years since I worked there when I got my first job.
What was the day-to-day doing the, like, are you working with the patients or are you just mm-hmm. taking vials of semen and putting them under a microscope? I don't know what you do.
Yeah, like, all the above.
I don't know how someone finishing into a jar then gets inseminated in somebody. I know it's not a turkey uh-huh. baster, but we all say turkey baster.
Yeah. All the, yeah, you're correct. It is that. It is all that. So pretty much normal day. See who's on the schedule. Oh, we're pretty busy. Gotta get a double book. We had two collection rooms. So we'll, you know, grab one.
I love the safer work terminology of these.
Yeah.
You know, the collection room.
Yep, they were the collection rooms. I did not step foot in there. Oh, no.
I didn't know what a collection room looked like.
It's just a bench with a sink. That's all.
That was disappointing. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, they had a drawer.
It's always there's always the sitcoms that have it where it's like, you know, old magazine collections and VHS tapes. And, you know, there's always the... Yeah, you know, I'm sure every hack guy comedian's ever had to go to one of them has said that, you know, ask the nurse to come help me out. Or maybe that's just the videos that I watch on the internet. But what is...
I've experienced it all. So there are magazines in there, and I would only check them out before they would be put into the rooms. Pretty much, yeah, just drop a guy off there. He would do something awkward, like, draw a stick figure with boobs in front of me. He's like, I brought my own material. I've gotten that. I've gotten a guy that, like, took really long in there. Like, I was like, dude, you got to get out. I got other people. I had a guy that went too fast in there. I was like, oh, that's uncomfortable. Like, that didn't take much time. Men in there get the specimen and a sterile cup, and then we'll analyze it, check the volume, check the pH, check the viscosity, the color, and then we would put it on a microscope and then put it onto a scanner that would do a semen analysis. And if it was at a certain concentration, we'll do a manual count where we'll literally put it in a microscope and I'm counting those swimmers. Yeah.
Oh, fuck all that, right? Mm-hmm. For real?
Yeah.
Counting by hand in a microscope?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because isn't it like per million?
Yeah, so you do a certain field, and based on those fields, in your view, your actual view from a microscope, whatever you can see is your field, right? So you do about 8 fields, and then you can base it off of what concentration you have per that field to give an overall analysis with your total volume to give your calculations that amount, right? So you have the concentration from the field check on the microscope times by the volume, boom, that's how many you know is in there.
Okay. Now, are you and the other techs doing any conversation, other than here's the room, wash your hands, any other conversation with them? Like, are the results going
to
doctors?
No, I have given the results to the patients. Yeah, I had to.
What's that conversation like? It's already making me uncomfortable thinking about having to hear it.
Oh, I literally just go point by point by point. This is what you got. Your volume's this. This is your color. This is your concentration. This is considered normal. This is not. If you want to follow up, talk to your doctor. Like, we just give the results. If they have questions, that's not on me.
Well, that's what I'm curious, because, like, I've had x-rays. I've had ultrasounds done because of, like, heart stuff. And mm-hmm. I just had a hernia put in.
Oh.
And x-ray techs won't tell you anything. They're, like, the worst is, like, I've literally had them going through after the surgery for my hernia, when they pushed my guts back on
guts
the inside
back,
of my body.
Yeah.
The guy was like, huh, well, that's not supposed to be like that. I'm like, what's not supposed to be like what? And he goes, you know what? Never mind. I'm like, that's not what you're supposed to say. Like, you know, something's mm-hmm. clearly up. And they don't give any. Like,
they don't
want to
get in trouble.
Okay.
That's all it is. They're covering their own ass. They don't want to be sued. They can't say something that could potentially cause a problem. So it's
in fairness,
up to the
doctor. I guess. Nobody's going to be mad and sue you over the incorrect count of their swimmers.
No, I mean, no. Oh, come on.
Working at this facility, were mm-hmm. you happy with this job, or is it one of
those?
Yeah,
I worked there for about 5 years. It's a long time. So 5 years analyzing jizz, and like I have a bit. Saying, like, the first time I ever saw it was, like, at work, you know? And I was like, ugh. No, one of the first days, this was really gross. We were, like, freezing the specimen, and we put in these little vials to be frozen in, like, you know, liquid nitrogen or nitrogen vapor. So it's, like, negative 120 degrees Celsius it's stored at. And when we're aliquoting, so like taking some volume from here to here to here, there's like a string of the jizz because of the viscosity of it. And that was like one of the first experiences with it. And I was like, lovely. Yeah.
I know what it looks like. I've dealt with it and it still makes me vomit thinking, just hearing you talk about that.
Yeah, that was like one of my first experiences. I was like, oh, this is going to be an interesting substance to manipulate. Yeah. I've seen some gross, gross ones. Yeah.
Oh, what's the grossest you've seen? Come on.
Tell
me the grossest you've seen, because if I throw up on camera, that's going to be viral on TikTok.
Okay. One of the grossest ones I've seen is like where you flip the cup upside down and it doesn't move because it's so thick.
You pull the Dairy Queen?
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. Another one we called, like if it was a really big volume, we were like, oh, that's a big gulp. That's what we call those.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. Like I was like, that's not normal volume. That's high. I've seen like some really weird colors. And another gross thing for people who couldn't just, you know, dry dog it because you're not allowed to use lubrication because that could affect the test results. Didn't think about that. It'll dilute it or otherwise. Or
that makes sense.
Like lubrication also, you're using could affect the pH or, you know, kill a sperm that way.
Yeah, too. Makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, so the men that couldn't do it, they had to use collection condoms. And those things were gnarly. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's as self-explanatory as it is. It's just put it on top and go to town and at least you don't have to worry
about
it. You
would like tie it off and it'll be in the, you know.
Oh man, how did you prepare yourself for that?
Oh, I hated those. Those I would have like someone like pry it open while I go in with a pipette and suck it up. That was gross. I didn't like those. But in the days when you're all by yourself, you just have to do the best you can. But there'll be times where it'll be like a discolored and I have to ask, I'm like, oh, I think there might be blood in the specimen. Is this from an internal source or an external source? I have to find out if they're bleeding internally or externally. Really gross specimen you probably never heard of. It's called a retrograde ejaculation.
Yeah, retrograde ejaculation sounds like I caught that because I broke up with a tarot card reader and she cursed me.
Okay, so what really happens, instead of it going forward, the jizz, it goes backwards. So what happens is after they ejaculate, they have to urinate directly afterwards and then have to process the urine to get the semen out of it.
That's a thing that happens to people?
Yeah, it's a thing. I never knew it was a thing, but it's a thing. It's a thing.
How does one figure out the, like, is it just a matter of like, all right, I guess just nothing comes out when, like, how do you?
Yeah, I had a handful of patients that, and them and their wife were trying to get pregnant doing an IUI, intrauterine insemination, so I would need to get all his swimmers so I can clean it and then get it ready for the turkey baster that you were talking about, which was like it was literally a tomcat, so it was like a little catheter, but yeah, that's what it was.
I feel like, yeah. Oh, okay. Congratulations. You've grossed me out to the point of no words.
Oh, like I was like, no, it's not a big deal. I work in a lab. I see gross stuff all the time. I'm just like, whatever. So
the physics of that, of where your body shoots it in the wrong direction, and then you have to pee out. By the way, this is 100% getting the 18+ explicit tag on the podcast.
Yeah, <that's true. laughs> That's part of my comedy. I'm trying to get it cleaner, so I can't do any of this shit.
You're having the right jokes about everything else other than your own life.
Yeah, I know. So hard.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. I mean, now I know why we were both on The Dirty Show at the Plato House of Comedy.
That's right.
Which I kept saying, it's like, I don't consider myself a dirty comic. But then I went out and did an entire routine about depression and suicide. So maybe I am dirty.
Midnight open mic, remember?
All right. So, your time at the fertility clinic came to an end. You decided to move to another laboratory. Was it also a fraternity is
fertility.
Fertility. You know, the older I'm getting,
fuck the fraternities.
The older I'm getting, the more difficult it's for me to pronounce certain words, and I don't know why. Or
I used to have a speech impediment. Okay, and so it wasn't. And I do a lot of public speaking. You know, I host bar trivia like twice a week. And every once in a while, some of that speech impediment just comes up out of nowhere. So I totally feel you.
Yeah, well, my entire life has been, like I said, radio, podcast, comedy, acting. I can only rely on my voice and my ability to say words. Like, I don't have, I don't think, a speech impediment. I had a small, very faint Baltimore accent when I was, you know, that I purposely worked on getting rid of as I got older. Like, you know, the Baltimore accent is a mix between like a Cockney and an Irish accent way back in the day. So it's like elongated O's, you know, it's a little bit more nasally. You blend words together like ambulance, Blair Road, B-E-L space, A-I-R, Blair. We say things like zinc, water, wash. You know, I was doing a voiceover for a TV show one time, and I was like, for the annual awards held in Tacoma, Washington. Let me take that again. Tacoma, Washington. Needless to say, I didn't get that. So I worked hard to be able to say water and wash. And now my job is a tour guide where I do 80-minute comedic tours around the city of Boston. So I have no reason but to talk all the time. And for the first time in my entire life last year, last summer, I lost my voice from talking.
Oh, my God.
With the exception of being sick, I have never lost my voice. And I did a whole 3 months of tours around Boston where it sounded like this.
You sound more like a Bostonian that way.
Right? It was rough. I'm still not even bouncing back. My voice is still not even bouncing back. Yeah, I'm going to, before this season starts, I'm going to have to definitely do some like vocal warm ups and training just so I can make sure I can survive.
Lubricate those cords. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it's one of the, I was literally just rereading my review from my trainers. That was like, Dennis messes up but corrects himself a lot. I was like, yeah, it's, I've noticed this thing. It's a problem. I get it. Please. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Like just the amount of words that I mix up. And I've written into my app. So there's a couple of times where I can be like, say nothing's coming to mind at this moment. Or I can wait, stop, rewind. Let me refresh that. I've built those in. So it's when I do them on naturally and not as part of a gag, it looks like it's part of the gag. But anyway. So what was the impetus to move to a different lab?
I was there 5 years and I needed to get more money. You just didn't pay enough life. You got to move on. So I ended up going to a toxicology lab. And so I moved from just semen to just urine. And a lot of urine. Really gross. It was almost grosser than the semen.
How often does an unintentional spill happen?
With urine or semen?
Both.
You know, talking about those retrogrades, and I had a coworker who accidentally spilt the urine everywhere in front of the patient, and she cried.
Ouch. I mean, when I have to do a drug test for a job, the amount of, like, steady grip I had so I don't spill one drop of urine, I can't imagine taking those tiny little vials around and being able to not, and just being constantly worried that you're going to drop the ickiest of ick all over paperwork.
I mean,
someone's lunch.
This happened before. I mean, you keep shit separate, okay? No food and food and drink in the lab. But it has happened, like a little spillage, but it's not very often. But usually, you work in a hood and you have a sterile environment and you can clean it up with bleach and ethanol. It's not a big deal.
Okay, so toxicology lab. What are you testing for toxicology? Just drug lab. Okay, so you're the narc.
Drug testing.
You're a narc now. Okay.
Testing for everything, like how much oxymorphone, how much oxytocin, how much like all the SSRIs, how much you got of the, you know, anything in your freaking system, they tested for that. And it was just to monitor the doctor's prescriptions to use that I was like using properly. And so we're one of those confirmation labs that do that type of verification on an LCMS instrument.
Okay. Is there between different labs testing for different things, like at a fertility lab you're testing, like you're working with semen, was there
and blood
semen and blood, did you have to learn specifically how to work with those fluids? Are they, is it like Is there a training to learning how to work with semen and blood as opposed to urine and other bodily fluids?
You
this is also
training.
The most body fluid talk I've had on the podcast ever in my entire life.
You take a blood-borne pathogen training at any laboratory, so you would know how to handle all of those substances at any lab. But obviously you wouldn't be as often to work with semen. Most labs don't have that. But it doesn't really matter which job. You're going to know how to work with it. It's just learning how to manipulate volumes, how to pipette, how to handle substances, how to dispose. So any lab job you'll learn.
Okay. Well, I mean, when you're doing like individual testing, like counting sperm cells, as opposed to like figuring out what drugs are in, like, I'm just wondering if there's actual training or if it's like, all right, for the first 3 days of work, you're going to sit here in this office and look at poorly made and acted instructional videos on how to count different bodily fluids and chemicals.
Every lab has SOPs. So you have a standard operation procedure. So you have to follow the SOP for every single thing you do. So you just read the SOPs. So any lab you do, it literally has a step-by-step of how you're supposed to do everything appropriate in the lab. Those are the things that are being monitored by accreditations associations and laboratory accreditations. So everything is monitored and everything has to be processed a certain way that is specified for that laboratory. So you have to learn those processes at every place.
And I have to imagine I've been through a lot of corporate training where you have to sit there and watch those HR videos where it's like, hi, don't ask your coworkers out on dates and don't make inappropriate jokes in front of all of them. I imagine your HR videos also include, hey, don't fling bodily fluids at each other.
No, it doesn't.
That's already assumed.
I mean, it can happen by accident. You can't sue them for it. It can happen. But no, just, you know, regular, read the SOPs and sign your life away, you know, things like that.
All right. And now that you're a manager of a laboratory, what's your what does your day-to-day look like?
In the morning, I usually review all the data that was processed the day before, sign out the reports, and provide it to physicians or clients or directly to patients. And then assign the tasks that need to get done, look over inventory, manager of all of the incoming specimens, so make sure all that gets done. Just kind of oversee every area, okay, and make sure everything flows through with getting the specimens, assessing them, processing them, sending out the reports to the clients.
Was the having to go from tech to manager where you're now managing supplies and equipment, pipettes, gloves, ordering new equipment, was that a logical step for you? Or because for me, going from like bartending to bar manager, where I'm now having to count inventory and figure out what we're going to sell and be able to make sure I have proper order and stay within budget, was a necessarily newly learned skill for me. Was that something where you're like, all right, I got to figure out how to maintain whatever equipment we have, because when you're dealing with body fluids, it's 10 times more important to make sure that you have gloves in stock as opposed to me. Mm-hmm. If I run out of Captain Morgan, oh well.
Yeah, you don't want to see my Excel spreadsheets. I have a full analysis of how much the reagent we need, when the expiration date is, how often it takes to get the supply, how much it costs, and all that is in consideration. So, like, the lead time, in case, how much we use per week, all that's put into use to get the calculation of how much we should order and when we should reorder. A lot of it I eyeball. But I have it all. There's a whole system and the whole inventory system set up, so it will trigger when to reorder based on those calculations.
Oh, you tell me I don't want to see your Excel spreadsheets. I want to see Excel spreadsheets, right? I did not learn how to use Excel spreadsheets until I was 38, all right? Like,
I'm not even 38.
I told you I grew up in entertainment and the services industry. I have no discernible skills in an office outside of being able to talk to people. I have nothing. The only reason I even started using Excel spreadsheet is because tax season 1 year, my first year as an entertainer, full-time entertainer, comedian. Like, I got laid off from radio in 2018. And so I went full-time comedian and actor because, like, this is the world telling me something. This is telling me to follow my dreams. No, it wasn't. And I had to figure out how to use Excel sheets to begin with, or just figure out how to put things into it. and then create the Excel sheet of all my taxes and my budget and all my receipts and all the money I was making doing comedy, writing, newspaper work. Then
That's
I was also
right.
doing freelance podcast recording and freelance audio engineers for like concerts and stuff. And I had to take when I did my taxes for 2019, I had something like 22 different W-2s.
Holy
and then
fuck.
Also, yeah, and like six 1099s. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous for somebody who goes from having like one or two jobs a year to actually now having to pay.
You know, oh, yeah. No, you definitely need an Excel spreadsheet for that.
I fell in love with Excel spreadsheets. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
My favorite thing to do is just, for no reason, I do it all the time, is just format boxes to date and money. Like, to dollars and dates. I love it. It's my favorite thing to do. No reason to do it. I'll just do it sometimes. And then my other favorite thing is figuring out if I add up to automatic sum up these boxes to have a total in another box. It's my favorite. And then when it doesn't work, it is so infuriating to find out why it's not working.
You need to learn about pivot tables, and then you'll really love Excel. Does it all for you. Yeah.
All right. So while doing this laboratory job, when did you start deciding to become a comedian?
So I've been working in the lab since 2012, and then I started to become a comedian. I think it was in 2019. That's when I started in 2019.
Oh,
so
that's a good time
to
start. You
right?
know, months before a gigantic global pandemic.
Hey, at least I was already got my foot in the door for like a solid year before.
People who started comedy on Zoom baffles me. The people in 2020, after the pandemic happened, the amount of people that was like, hey, I just decided I wanted to be a comedian now while we can't leave our houses. Like, I baffles
me. Yeah, that's crazy. That I wouldn't even think of that as an idea then. But no, I was going through a terrible breakup, and, of course, and I needed a change. So I was in between roller derby and stand-up comedy, and I went with stand-up comedy.
I was going to ask you. I didn't know you were a roller derby.
I don't.
You didn't do it, but you almost did it. Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. I have many friends in roller derby over the years, and I fully respect everything about roller derby. I wish it would become much more viable because if there's anybody who needs healthcare, it's roller derby players. Like, how can you guys not figure out just a unified healthcare for yourselves? But you're paying dues. Anyway. So, stand up. This is a question I hate that I have to ask women this question. Did you have any female comedian icons growing up? You're a little bit younger enough to me where you might have a little more. But I've talked to plenty of female comedians who had admitted that they never saw a female comedian until they started doing comedy. Like, that's all their crazy. Comedy icons are men because that's the only people they saw doing comedy. Yeah. Whereas me, a devotee of stand-up comedy my entire life, you know, I grew up as that big 70s, 80s bubble was about to burst. So I saw stand-up all the time. I could say that Gilda Radner was hilarious. Joan Rivers is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Jane Curtin, Judy Gold. Like, I grew up with all of these amazing female comedian icons. Like, I always talk about that. I wanted to grow up to be Lucille Ball. I didn't see a difference between her and me. Like, it didn't matter that she was one. I wanted to grow up to be funny, just like Lucille Ball. You know, I'm picking Lucille Ball, not Groucho Marx. Like, there was definitely something there. And then to listen to other people go, oh, no, I knew Lucille Ball existed, but I never saw her. I didn't know who Joan Rivers was until after she died. Like, was that... I'm glad you're on that side because I'm trying to find those. I want people to be able to have icons of their own of their own ilk. Like, again, I grew up watching 227. Didn't see a difference between those Sherman Hensley in Amen. And I didn't see any difference between Sherman Hensley and myself. Like, I grew up at least in that kind of world, whereas some people didn't get to see, you know, a black comedic actor on TV to be inspired. So for you as a woman, was there female comedian icons that you look towards that you were like, oh, I want to be like that?
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm Jewish too, so of course when I know Judy Gold for sure. But when I was in college, me and my friends watched a lot of Lisa Lampanelli. She was freaking hilarious.
I think Lampanelli was hitting right at the age where you were college bound.
Yeah. Yeah. That was back when like the roasts were like really new and fun. But she's freaking hilarious. Of course, there's Paula Poundstone, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Back in the day. There's even, we used to watch Ellen. Ellen's stand-ups, her HBO specials from back in the day were some of the best that I remember, even though she's kind of gone crazy. But it's funny that you even say, like, oh, you don't mention female comics. Like, when people ask me what my favorite comic is, to this day, I only list female comics. I don't really watch much men. Maybe I'm sexist the other way. I only watch the female comics because that's the only people I can relate to. It's the one that makes the most sense to me. It's like, yeah, I love that strong female empowerment of a woman being brave enough to, like, go up on stage. Monique was funny as fuck, too, back in the day. I'm trying to think of the older ones. Sarah Silverman. Jesus yes. is Magic. I was obsessed with that stuff. I only drink Fiji water. Like, I loved Sarah Silverman back in the day.
She's great. And, you know, she's, like, not that crazy of a person. Like, she's down to earth from what I've heard from friends of mine who have worked with her. And that she's... But I feel sometimes bad for her because a lot of her attention comes because of her looks. Because she is conventionally attractive. And so, I don't know. I don't have to ever worry about that as being a flaw in my world of comedy. That, oh, somebody's booking me because I'm a good looking... I'm not Matt Rife, right? I also don't know the worry about being a woman and having to worry, oh, is this person booking me because they're going to creep on me later on? Or this person after the show's coming up to me because they want to try to go back to my hotel room or take me back to their room or whatever like that. I don't have to worry about those.
Yeah, you don't.
In fact,
girls do.
As a fat, ugly man, I'm hoping somebody's going to come after the show. And be like, hey, I like you. Will you come sleep? I don't know why I'm steering away from the word fuck right now when we just talked about jizz pipettes being strung along to each other. We've already got the explicit 18 plus on this one. Let's go for it anyway. Ooh. But yeah, I mean, I can only hope that after a show, somebody wants to fuck me afterwards. Where you guys, it's a legitimate fear. I hate that we have to have this conversation. I hate that this has to be a thing on podcasts. Like, I could also just not talk about it, but I feel it's also irresponsible to not at least turn a spotlight to some of these and having to let some people get out their rage if they need it, or just like, hey, FYI, it is a problem. You guys got to figure these things out.
Yeah, no, it's actually, it definitely is a problem. We even have, like, Facebook chats of just, like, the female comics in the DFW area of, like, comics to, like, watch out for.
Oh, I want to be a part of those
something.
Chats so bad. I want to be a part of those chats.
Yeah, no,
just
because,
as a fly,
like,
in the wrong.
The word gets spread, and then shit comes back to somebody. So, like, we, you know, it's just for us to be like, hey, just be careful around these people.
Yeah, I mean, male comedians, not only do we not have that kind of Facebook group to warn you, like, hey, there's predators, we don't even communicate with each other on bookers who stiff us. Like, we have so...
Oh, that's true.
Like, that's also should be a very big thing that we should be talking about.
Yeah,
like,
because...
Hey, this club screwed somebody over, or this place, you know...
Or a comic, hey, you're working everything for free, and now no one else is going to get booked because you're working everything for free, and somebody's like, hey, I'm not allowed to get in, or I'm not going to work for free, and then, but they're like, this guy will. Well, that's why they're getting booked, and you're not. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the conversations are... No, yeah, and then I'm... There's so many Facebook groups where, you know, you get the predatory bringer producers.
Oh, the bringer shows?
Yeah.
Anytime I see that, I'm like, no. I mean, I did it. I fell for it. I did it when I was younger. In 2019, I did it.
That's who they prey upon. That's who they prey upon. People who don't know better, you know. But
yeah, I did it in 2019.
I make it my job to post and, like, don't do that. Like, During the pandemic, there was a Facebook group that got really big called Displaced Comedians. This friend of the podcast, been on an episode, Nico Lukoff, started this Facebook group just where people could post about their Zoom shows and stuff like that. And the amount of times that I've gone in this group to, like, stop people from, like, posting, like people going, hey, everybody, if you Venmo me $20 for this Zoom show, the proceeds will go to whatever foundation. Right? I'm like, no. That's not how this works. No, do not pay them money for a donation. Ticket money donation, that's fine. But don't pay them for that. Hey, I'm starting a TV show with this studio, this and that. Doesn't pay, but it's great exposure. I'm like, then it's not a great exposure if you're not paying.
No.
Okay?
No.
Like, the pushback I got from comedians who literally would reply to my comments of, like, hey, everybody, you're good enough to get paid. And the amount of comments that would come back was like, no, we are not. Stop ruining this for us. I'm like, you guys are literally fighting against your own interests. I'm on your side, and yet I'm somehow the asshole. Or people selling classes on how to, like, be grow your Instagram followers. And then I have the point is like, you have only 1,500 Instagram followers. And then the replies back of, oh, you have 1,200. Maybe you should take her class. I'm like, she's not an Instagram star. She can't tell you how to get big.
The comics, beginning ones, they're desperate.
You know, and some of that desperation never goes away with some of them, too. It's like, but also it's like, that's, yeah.
But yeah. Anyway. That's when I started was 2019. So I'll be about 5 years in the game about now.
Almost. Yeah, coming up on that. So how was comedy starting in the Dallas scene for you? Because for me, it seems very spread out. My just small little visit down there. What's Dallas comedy scene like?
Yeah, so, you know, it's Dallas-Fort Worth. It's the whole Metroplex. So you could go drive all over the area and work every single night if you want, for sure, open mic-wise. But there's a lot of clubs, so that makes it nice. But it's pretty friendly, I would say. People come quite a bit.
So is the club scene easy to break into in the Dallas area? Like, is there a path? Are they trying to foster new talent? Because I can tell you in Boston, there's nothing about fostering talent. We barely have clubs. There's like one full-time club. And then there's a club that is like a pop-up, but it's the longest running club in Boston. But it's a pop-up and a nightclub. They don't do anything to foster new talent. Like, there's no clear, in Boston, there's no clear path to going from open micer to club comedian to feature. It's basically hope somebody likes you enough the bookers are never at the clubs. It's such a bad system. Like, and at the club, they refuse to hire comedians to work there.
Yeah. So, I think it's a little bit easier in DFW. There's a lot of stable clubs that have been there for a long time. And you know, comedians work at those clubs, too, as bartenders or servers or just, like, I don't know, audio guys, door guys or whatever. There's people that work there. So they usually have a chance to, like, hey, if someone drops out and they know that you're working the mics, you have a chance to slide on. There's a lot of, like comics can get in for free to any club. Like, Hyenas, you can always get into free and just, like, watch a show if it's not, like, sold out. So I used to always go to Hyenas. There used to be three. After the pandemic, there's only two. But I used to go to, like, there was Wednesday nights was open mic for Dallas, Thursday nights for Fort Worth, and then Friday nights were Plano open mic for Hyenas. So there's, like, a way for you to get in. But it's changed. When I first started, the new people, you go in at midnight. You go up at midnight, right? They'll have the open mic, 75, 80 people, right? You're on the last block. Nowadays, it's so different. They don't do it like the way they used to at Hyenas. It's like you put your name in and it's like you don't work your way up anymore. It's like it's a crapshoot. They'll have some random guy because they're giving like the new guys a shot. But for me, you got to work your way up. Come every freaking week to work your way up to get higher on the list so people will see you more. And the more you work, the more they see you on social media. All of this comes into play. The bookers are watching behind the scenes. And they'll book you once they see you booking more shows.
Oh, I tell you, in Boston, the clubs that I'm talking about don't even have open mics.
Oh, yeah. Almost every club here has an open mic, too. Plus bar mics all over town.
It's nice to see that in other cities. Like, that's the traditional comedy method.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boston's not breaking the wheel. Like, they're not creating a new method. They're just refusing to be a part of what has always worked, and they're not suggesting any new way to do it. Neither of the guys who do booking for the main two clubs are ever at the club, let alone going around from club to club to open mic to see a new talent. It's very disappointing. And I'm established well enough in the scene that people know me. I've been around. I'm not complaining that I'm not getting somewhere, and that's why. Like, I'm seeing a complete and total. They teach a class.
Yeah,
but nobody from
that's
the
how
class
I started.
Gonna, yeah, yeah, nobody from the class is gonna get.
Nope.
You know, booking.
I'm the only one from the class.
The booker doesn't teach the class.
No, that ain't doing shit. That will just get your foot in the door to go to an open mic. But like, you just have to. You have to put yourself out there, get booked, and be fucking funny. And then
was that?
You get,
did you start with open mics or did you start with the class?
I started with the class and open mics simultaneously. So the first class I took was at DCH. It was DCC, formerly called DCH, Dallas Comedy House. Now it's Dallas Comedy Club in Deep Ellum. So I did a class there back in like 2019, and that just got my foot in the door. And then I didn't pay for any other classes ever since. But there's a lot of clubs and a lot of comics, like older ones that have been around, like, hey, do my class. If you do it, that'll give you a shot at getting booked faster. It really does. But, you know, I'm a cheap ass.
Yeah, I never did the comedy class thing. I've done workshops. I'm not against comedy classes. I'm not against comedy classes. I think it's a good starting point for some people. Mm-hmm. I attribute it to, as an actor, I attribute comedy classes to acting classes that are given by casting agencies. I think they're, like, if you're an actor and you want to get cast in movies and TV shows, best way to get on casting agents' radar is you take their classes, whether mm-hmm. you need it or yep. not. You're not going to, I mean, I can't imagine at these casting agencies, you're going to take a class that's going to be earth-shattering and you're going to learn the art of acting. It's just so that somebody can see your face more often, they hear your name, and when they see it in a booking or they think of, hey, I need somebody with red hair. Oh, wait, I just met somebody with red hair at one of our classes.
They're like, oh, I saw you on that flyer recently. Yep.
Yeah, and I refuse to take those comic classes. So the other method in the world of acting to get on an casting agent's radar is you take their free classes. Almost all of them have a free Q&A with the casting agents. Mm-hmm. You go to them, and you not just go to them. You got to make a goddamn spectacle of yourself, which is what I do.
Say something. Yeah.
Very good. Stand up and ask questions. Be gregarious. Be outgoing. And that's what got me into the eyes of Boston casting, which was my plan, was them to remember me when they would call me for cattle calls. Just be the most exuberant guy in the room. Make them remember you. You know, that's how I got so many of my auditions. I never got cast in anything because once they pass my audition, they're like, we don't want that fat, ugly white guy. No. Why would we? He's short. No. But it got me in a lot of eyes. Anyway, but I mean, and for, in the world of comedy, take a comedy class. Well, comedy is a skill that needs to be learned. Mm-hmm. Whether the person who's teaching can teach it or not, that's a whole different story. But it is a skill that needs to be learned. There is a craft to it. And then you have to learn that craft after you've been given the idea of what the craft is. You have to go off then and then learn it for better or for worse.
Yeah.
How did you feel coming out of your class? Was it?
I was probably
Did you feel empowered?
Oh yeah, I was like probably the best one in the class. It just it came more natural to me. I was more willing to just do it and go for it. Of course, one of my first few bits I ever wrote was talking about working at the fertility clinic because it was like the irony of my first job, and that was a big part of like one of my first like damn, I'm funny. I got a funny life, you know, and just now I just do it for like more mental health. It's good for my mental health to get those emotions and feelings out in ways and just like getting over that uncomfortable feeling doing stand up, you know, sometimes. And then that's led into other entertainment hosts that I've been doing now, a lot of trivia. I host a lot of bar trivia.
As a fellow bar trivia host, I did not get into bar. First off, you got a legit college degree and you have to use your smarts every time you go to work. I'm sure you're good at trivia. Six years of community college and did not graduate. I am a dummy, all right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason why I read the questions at trivia and not answer the questions at trivia. It's because I'm barely literate. The reason I got into hosting it is another comedian friend of mine. We're going to talk about a lot of cities here. I started comedy in Baltimore, where I grew up and raised. Comedian of my friend of mine who was in Baltimore at the same time as me. We both left. I went to Boston. He went to New York. One day he messaged me, he's like, hey, the trivia company I work for are looking for people in the Boston area. I think you'll be really good at it. You're energetic. You're funny. You're smart. I'm like, no,
there
I'm not.
Go.
He goes, it's you good pay on nights. You can read. I know that. I've seen your notebook. It's money to make on open mic nights, and you still get to test out working jokes.
Yep.
So, should try it. So I did it, and I fell in love with it. I love hosting trivia. I'm not doing it now because the company fired me because I said they should be embarrassed. Get this. I worked for a company. They wrote a question one day, which was, what two primary colors mix together to make green? And I was like, I literally sent a very strongly worded email after the show. I was like, you should be embarrassed that you asked a grown adult this question. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Was I supposed to be at an elementary school today? Show this to the owners and they will also be embarrassed by what you asked me to ask adults today.
Damn.
Over 3 months to decide to fire me for it.
Yeah, my trivia boss would fire you for that, too.
I would hope a trivia boss would be like, what writers wrote this shit question? But here we are. I'm now unemployed. So by unemployed, I mean full-time comedian, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I absolutely loved it. For me, it was a performance. It was
exactly.
Like, I got to write jokes. I got to do crowd work. I was going around talking to people all the time, building an audience, and I had fun, successful trivia nights. Mm-hmm. Were you, but of course, most of the trivia hosts come from people who play trivia, and then they see a slide or they see a sign going, oh, hey.
Hiring.
Hey, we're hiring. It's like, oh, yeah. I like trivia. Maybe I can do this. And they are boring fucks. They're like, here's the mm-hmm. question, you know, and then that's it. Which, please tell me you're also on the same side as me and not, I like trivia. I think I can do this.
No, I saw someone made a comment on a DFW comedy page one day and like, hey, we're looking for hosts. And I was like, well, that's better than not making any money at an open mic. Right. So I decided to try it. And I've been doing it now for 2.5 years. It's crazy.
I've been fortunate enough at my trivia places to never have the boring ass people are like, we're just here to win a gift card.
I
buy one appetizer and drink waters. I have rowdy, fun people that don't give a fuck about winning.
Boom, that's what I got.
Good.
Rowdy. I have this thing that I do. We have, because it's on the computer, it's like all smartphones. They're multiple choice questions. Some are right and answers, right? You got to type it in. And for those, I say, I don't care what the hell you put. You know, just put something funny. And if I think it's funny, I'll give you credit for it. And they always say, I like pussy jokes. Give me the pussy jokes. There's too many dick jokes in the world. We need pussy jokes. So if they say anything like tits, Miggy, pussy lips, whatever, I give it to them.
Nice. One of the things I always say, like if it's a really tough question, I'll preface it with like, by the way, teams, if you don't know the answer to the question, I always say write in something you think will make me laugh. If I laugh hard enough, you'll be awarded comedy bonus points.
Yeah. Oh, I'm like, if I like your team name, I'll give you bonus points. I don't care. I don't care. I'm working on tips, baby. We're just here to have a good time.
Are you working for a national company or a local company?
Local company, yeah.
They
might be able to do a show in Boston if you want me to hook you up.
What company are you working for?
Oh, it's called Head Tilt Entertainment.
Head Tilt Entertainment, because I used to work for Sporkle.
Oh, I haven't heard of them.
Oh, you haven't? They're nationwide. They have a website. That's what they're really big for is doing like having a website of trivia where you go to the sporkle.com and you do their little trivia games and stuff. And they expand.
Oh.
And the reason, what happened was they at the beginning of the pandemic, they bought out the company that I originally worked for, which was Stump Trivia. So now I'm under this big, huge corporate entity. And
there's so many. There's so many
right?
of them.
I know. Yeah. It's so easy to start one. But the Sporkle's probably now the biggest because they took over Stump. Stump was pretty big. Geeks Who Drink is a big one. They're another nationwide one.
They're around, nationwide. No, Head Tilt's a local one, but they have a couple shows in Austin and a couple shows in, like, I think Greensboro, North Carolina. So they're trying to, like, go more nationwide. Yeah.
It's interesting how these companies just start out because, like, there's so many people that just do trivia on their own. Like, there's just, I'm just me. It's my.
Yeah.
I'm all by myself. I write all the trivia. I do all the bookings and stuff. And I'm like, that's too much work. I don't want to write questions. I've had plenty of people hire me to do private gigs, and I'm not writing trivia. I'm just stealing trivia from the company. I've saved every trivia questionnaire that I've had. They're all sitting on a hard drive. That way I can go right back, pull them all up, and just dump it out and not have to worry about doing any work to figure out any questions.
Ours is just all written there, and I just read it. I never pre-test it. I just read whatever's in front of me.
Right? I tell teams all the time that when you hear me read the question, that's the first time I've read that question. There's no prep work done.
Yeah, no, there's not. We go for it. But I do two different venues. One's like the Rowdy Bar in Addison, and this other one's in the Colony, not too far from Plano, where we met, called Lava Cantina, and that's like half a concert venue, half restaurant. And we do the trivia in the restaurant on Friday night. So it's fun.
Excellent. What's been your favorite team name? Because mine was Down with the Pastryarchy.
I have this one guy, he does Legends of the Hidden Nipple. And that's like, it's probably one of my favorite team names. Oh, let me tell you a funny story about him. So we had a question one time about Game of Thrones, right? And I think it was like everybody got it right except for one person. So I was like, oh, I have to look up who got it wrong, because everybody got it right. And the person got it wrong, it was the guy who's Legends of the Hidden Nipple guy. So I told him, his name's Tomas. Sorry, Tomas. I was like, Tomas, you got it wrong. And everyone was like, shame, shame, shame. In the whole bar, it was like one of my funniest moments hosting trivia ever. I will never forget it. So I like that.
All right. Well, I have my standard gags to the point where one of my teams wrote a Dead Air Dennis bingo card for trivia for me, which is like, oh my God, I can't hear that much. But it was a matter of like, find on the square when Dennis does, you know, does one of his standard gags, and one of my standard gags, which you're more than welcome to have because I don't do trivia anymore and I would love for this to live on. But it's a situation just like that where everyone got the correct answer except for one person. And no, I'm not going to tell you who got the question wrong because that would be very embarrassing for the Legends of the Hidden Nipple.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm going to do.
Because you catch them off guard. I love I love catching people off guard. And then, of course, you got to switch it up every once in a while. But
I switch it up every time.
It's only been a couple months now. I mean, I was going to leave in December anyway because I was going to travel for my time off from my current job of historic tour guide. And they fired me like a month before I was going to leave. I was like, I was fired. I was going to quit anyway. But 2 months since leaving, I honestly miss it. I had really good teams. I had really good venues. I was so fortunate in all those years that I've never had, like, in my venues, I never had to deal with people cheating. I would fill in other people's venues and catch people cheating. And my favorite catching people cheating moment, and I'm lenient. Like, if I catch you cheating, I was like, hey, look, I'm not kicking you out. You're getting 0 points for this question. If I catch you again, then you're out of the game. But this venue that I was filling in at had something like 75 teams a week.
That's a big show.
Huge, yeah. So I can't tell who everybody's team name is. Like, I can't figure it out. So I asked them, I was like, I call them cheating, flat out, red-handed, right in their hand, standing over the guy's shoulder, watching him go through the thing. I'm like, all right, guys, so I'm going to be like, hey, I'm just giving you a zero this round. What's your team name? They're like, not going to tell you. I'm like, so eventually they're like, oh, we're team so-and-so. I'm like, all right, cool. Then show me your scorecard on your phone so I can verify that. And he turns his phone off. I went, all right, you guys think you're smarter than me? Watch this. I go over to Mike. I go, hey, everybody, we still got like 90 seconds left in this round for this question. But real quick, the team of 8 guys over by the window by the front door there was just caught cheating. They refused to give me their team name.
Call them out.
The team that gets their team name and gives it to me gets 10 bonus points. Mob justice, motherfuckers. You got 90 seconds. And then I was like, and if I don't get their name, nobody wins this $50 gift card. Good luck, Pete, teens.
Right.
Music back on, walk over to the table. I was like, so what's the deal, guys? You want to give me the team name or not? And they're like, you're a fucking asshole. I'm like, look, there's a bouncer standing behind me. You're not going to do anything, frat boy. All right?
See, frat. Mm-mm. Yeah, no, I don't give a shit if my players cheat. And they can't. I don't even know how they would cheat because it's all on the smartphone and maybe the thing glitches, but I could care less.
Yeah, Googling answers, that's really about it. And I always,
honestly,
always ask me, it's like, well, if we're answering questions on the phone, how do you stop people from Googling the answers? And I go, simple. The people that ask, how do I stop them from cheating, are the ones who are going to cheat.
But ours is like, it has only 30 seconds per question. Okay. So you have to be quick. And if you can't answer in that time frame, like it's actually kind of hard to cheat on the way our format is.
Yeah, I mean, we're putting so many stringent rules into keeping people from cheating when it's just like, come on, people, just stop being assholes and have fun.
Yeah.
Like, why do you need to cheat against strangers in a bar? Why do you need that bragging rights?
People want to win that $20. It's very important. Yeah.
All right. So, what is Mad Props' next laboratory plan? Sooner or later, you're going to get bored with this job. You're not already getting bored as it is now.
I've been at my current job for 5.5 years working in a mold lab.
Oh,
now.
Then you're right on schedule for leaving.
I've been the manager for about two years. I've been the manager now. The next plan is probably like chief operations somewhere else or sales. That's really what I would like to get, a medical sales. So I got to figure out how to combine comedy and my laboratory into one and go in that direction. So Okay. Goal.
Medical sales, is that going from like hospital to hospital to try and sell them on prescription drugs? And I mean, I don't know.
That's what pharmacy. I would do more like laboratory equipment or potentially like reagents that'll be used for labs or testing from different biotechnology companies than pharmaceuticals.
Is there a difference because you just know the equipment better, or do you don't want to be part of the big pharma?
Yeah.
You don't want to sell people in the, here's a list of side effects. Don't pay any mind to that.
I mean, these are just dreams. These are just dreams. I'll probably just end
manifest
up
those
lab.
Dreams, Mads. Come on, you're a white girl. Manifest those dreams. This is your vision board right now. Tell me what your laboratory dreams are.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's the one, chief operation, or make more money someplace else.
Awesome. Well, this was long overdue, finally getting together to be able to
have
this conversation
got it
about
done.
All the disgusting medical tech.
I can go more in depth. I can go more in depth.
Oh, give us one more. Give us what you gave us the grossest. Let's what's the second grossest.
No, there's this one guy. This one time. I will never forget it. He was freezing his specimen. He's like 26 years old. And he was asking me, like, you know, what's the Wi-Fi password? All these questions when I put him in the collection room. And finally, I get a specimen after, like, checking on a slide just for DNA verification. And, hey, this is your specimen going on here. And he said something. He's like, do your parents have freckles? Like, it was weird. He would ask me these weird questions. I'm like, yeah, I do have freckles. I guess he was into, like, freckle girls. I don't know. So, of course, I'm analyzing his specimen this whole time, like, was he jacking off to me the whole time? I don't even know. So
was he looking at your name tag and actively Googling you with the Wi-Fi password that he just asked you for?
Yeah, it was just, anyways, a little uncomfortable. But I go out there, give him his results. Like, normal specimen. We're going to be freezing this many vials. We'll have this much concentration in each specimen. And then he's like, well, I know this is not common. After I go over his whole analysis, but he's like, would you care to go out for a drink sometime? Yeah, he did ask me out after he totally jacked off, and I had to analyze his specimen, and I was like, I don't swing that way, thank you. Yeah, it's because I did it like a little girl being good customer service. And, I mean, I was young.
The little girl voice. The little girl voice just turned him on even more. Like, you know, you were just egging him on.
Oh, I didn't even realize I did that.
Being polite. I was like, wait, she said no, but was it really a yes?
Yeah.
I'm coming back, guys.
I told my supervisor the story. He's like, you handled it well. I was like, thanks. So we had to deal with some uncomfortable situations there.
All right. One more uncomfortable story to make everyone cringe as they turn off the podcast.
Yes. I appreciate you inviting me on, Dennis.
Yeah. No, tell everyone where they can find all the comedy and trivia that is Madeline Teig.
Yes, what's up, Maddie, Mad Dog, Mad Props. That's right. Find me at Mad Props, MadProps at Instagram, Maddie Props, MadDiePROPZ on TikTok. I'm trying to get bigger on there. We also got Madeline Teig on Facebook, but Mad Props, Instagram. Find me. I host trivia Thursday nights at the Lion Crown in Addison, Friday nights at Lava Cantina in the Colony. We have a good time. I'll see you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Madeline. This was great.
Yeah. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
Better time. Poke some holes in the tie.